tragics. We're weekend packers, and we love that's the right. game of golf. And I think that's...
I showed you guys that on the weekend.
Yes, 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 you did. We'll get to that shortly.
Good evening, folks, and welcome back for another episode of the Tuesday Night Lives with Golf Days Australia, brought to you by Dint Putters and Cobra Puma Golf. A reminder for StreamYard comments. So we use a platform called StreamYard. There's a link in the post. Click on that. It'll allow us to show your profile photo and your name on screen if you've got any questions for tonight's interview. We've had some absolute belters when it comes to interviews since we started our Tuesday Night Lives, and tonight is no exception. So a reminder, though, you can go back and listen to any of our previous interviews by jumping onto our podcast. So search Golf Days Australia in your podcast service that you use, so whether it be Apple, Google, Spotify, jump in there and search Golf Days Australia, and you'll be able to find all of our previous interviews in there. We also record our interviews from a Tuesday night and throw them into the podcast. So, yeah, you'll be able to listen to them there. Alongside with me tonight is my fearless co-host, Nate. How are you this evening, mate?
Good, buddy. Good. Looking forward to this one. I've got plenty of mental issues when it comes to the golf course, so I'm ready to delve in deep.
Oh, I think we're both
scares me. It actually scares me to talk about some of this stuff because I know there's massive issues. And but yeah, I'm looking forward to talking to James and going
through. It's not a counselling session, mate. But
100%. I'm ready to put this chair back and lay down. I'm getting the chair to lay down. Don't worry.
Get the yellow legal pad out and start writing.
That's it. 100%.
We'll find your deepest, darkest secrets in tonight.
There's plenty in there. Don't worry.
Looking forward to it. But before we get into it, you've got a couple of exciting announcements to make tonight.
Yeah, for sure. Couple of shout-outs to the sponsors. Obviously, you know, Dint Putters and Cobra have been great supporters of us, and we've had a couple recently jump on board. So one I'm announcing tonight. The other one, of course, was the netreturn.com.au. So HT Tran there, you know, sells those nets, the net return, which is a great indoor setup that you can have, outdoor setup. He's got heaps of stuff there with the SkyTrack mats, everything else. So we're going to be delving into that. But to jump in, he gave away a $200 voucher to use in his online shop. And it was pretty easy for the guys to just jump over his Facebook page and tag a mate on his post. So we did that. We drew it last night, which was recorded in our podcast that people may have already heard on Tuesday. But Grant Rawson, Grant was our winner of that. So he got himself a $200 voucher. And there's some things in the pipeline there. I was talking to HT today, and we're looking to put some specials together coming up for our guys that may be not able to get to a golf course, and start looking at my own setup that I've got so that people can see how easy it is to have one.
Yeah, fantastic.
And that was a big one. And exciting one to announce tonight. We've got a another sponsor that's jumped on board. So SessionSet.com. So they're a craft brewing. They put a package together. They do. Yep, there you go. Crack it open. So they do the subscription boxes of craft beers, which are becoming pretty popular. So I'm a big fan of subscription services with other things as well. So you get your case of beer. They got delivered today. I'm pretty jealous. I'm waiting for mine. I'm drinking my Northerns at the moment, you know, pretty watered down, mass produced. So craft beers, you know, obviously a pretty fun thing to get into. And yeah, Session Setter come on board. So excited to do some work with him. Shane's a great bloke. He's only just started his business and pretty much just launched it in the last couple of months. So for those that are out there and want to have a look, sessionsset.com, you can go on there. So every Tuesday night, he has a happy hour for a couple hours. So the happy hour is open right now, and you can get a heap of different packages, new beers, six packs, mixed six packs, whatever you want. You can see them all there at really discounted prices. Another thing is if you want to, Father's Day is coming up, $75 it costs you. There's a special set there where you get a case of beer. So 16 beers, four packs in there. So $75 of Father's Day special is there at the moment. So jump on that. And the other thing, he's giving away a 3-month subscription at the moment, a Father's Day giveaway valued at $237. And all the information's on there. You've just got to go on and put on your Instagram your best, your favorite photo, your favorite dad photo, and you tag Session Set in there, include the hashtags that they need you to do, and you can win a 3-month mixed case Session Set subscription. So pretty cool one. I know I've got plenty of favorite dad photos. It'd be hard to choose, but easy done. And so, yeah, thanks to Shane and Session Set for coming on board.
Good work. A couple of cool announcements there. Looking forward to, yeah, getting stuck into it. Yeah, as I saw there, got my...
And obviously drink responsibly, but beer and golf goes hand in hand. We, you know, we enjoy...
Maybe we can ask Jamie that one tonight. So that's probably a good segue. Let's get into our interview tonight. So joining us this evening is a world-renowned mental performance coach and founder of Dare to Dream. He has dedicated over 15 years helping others achieve their sporting dreams, working with the likes of Lucas Herbert, the Ruffles siblings, Johnny Ruiz, golfer girl Georgia Clark as well. So we had Jasmine on last week, golfer girl Jasmine Finlay, and Georgia Clark is one of the golfer girls there. Will Heffern and plenty more. He's also caddied at the Augusta. At Augusta in the 2012 Masters as well. So I'm looking forward to asking a bit about that experience too.
Jeez.
So, Jamie Glazier, welcome on board, mate. How are you?
Thanks, guys. I'm really good. Although after that intro, I'm thirsty. You both have a beer in front of you, and I am dry.
come on, mate.
I'll drink in spirit.
We'll have to get Shane to hook you up, mate. The Session Set. You'll have to get a subscription service going, I reckon.
I definitely will. I love a beer, and beer and golf most certainly go hand in hand.
They do.
Good, good. So first up, we've got a little segment that I like to call a quick fire par five. So five shots to reach the hole. Yep. 1 to 2 word answers to get us going. You up for it?
Absolutely.
Cool. Longest drive.
Oh. Under 250.
It's a par five. Are you laying up or going for it in two?
I'm going for it in two.
Like it. Yeah. Favorite movie?
Oh, that's a good one. I'd have to say Happy Gilmore.
Ooh, I like it.
Got to get to that happy place.
Yeah, big Adam Sandler fan.
Yeah, good, good. First tee box, you're standing over the ball. What are you thinking?
Oh, this could be deep.
Yeah, I'm thinking smash it.
Smash it. All right. And last one, have you had a hole-in-one?
Oh, thanks for setting me up there. No, I've been playing for 26 years.
I had to ask that one. I had to throw that one in there. I know you've got
you and the boys. I haven't had one.
I know you and the boys have got a bit of banter about that. So sorry, I had to throw that one in there all the same. But, mate, we're both here with you anyway. So neither of us have had a hole-in-one. But getting into it, give us a bit of background on yourself. Yep. Who is Jamie Glazier and what's been the journey to get to here?
Yeah, I think I suppose it goes back to my teenage days. I was a pretty decent tennis player, sort of ranked inside the top 25 in Australia as a junior, and had a lot of physical ability, but the mental part of my game was sort of pretty non-existent. And I wouldn't have spent much time training the mind at all back then. And at the age of 20, I had a bit of a back injury and forced me out of tennis, and I went into golf and started teaching tennis, played golf, got down to scratch in about probably 2.5 years, and I noticed that some of those mental patterns from tennis transferred onto the golf course, and as soon as I started playing tournament golf, the same things kicked in, and I started to seek some help through various sports psychs, and just felt there was a little bit of a limit to, I just wasn't getting the answers that I felt I needed, and I started to do some research on things and found some really cool things that helped me improve my mental game and then helped me improve my performance, and was sort of preparing to turn pro. I was about probably 25 at that stage, 26, looking to turn pro, and then I had a back injury again, ruptured two discs in my lower back, and was told I'll never play golf again, never play sport again, and walk with a walking stick. And I think all the research that I'd done on the human mind, I sort of applied into my rehab and just saw the power of it. And at that point, that's when I sort of started to look into starting a business that I suppose would deliver more of a practical, application when it comes to mental performance training. And that was just on sort of just over 15, 16, 17 years ago. I had back surgery on September 11, 2001, the September 11.
Wow.
Which was, without a doubt, to this day, the most powerful day of my life. I had surgery the Monday morning, woke up Monday night sort of just obviously thinking my life's over and I'm not going to be able to do this and I'm not going to be able to do that. And then...
How old were you then, John?
Pardon?
How old were you then?
So I was 27 at that stage. Yeah, 27 at that stage. And turning the TV on that night and seeing the scenes that we saw at Twin Towers and that sort of stuff, it really put everything that I was dealing with into perspective, which at that point in time, that's exactly what I needed. I needed that bit of perspective because I was in so much pain. I was just, you know, hours out of surgery and I couldn't walk, couldn't move. And all that negative thinking that sort of was being triggered just all of a sudden got vanished. And it was, yeah, without a doubt, the most powerful day of my life. And even now, just talking about it, my heart's racing and, you know, getting emotional about that day and what, you know, what was transpiring, you know, in New York, but also just in my own world. It was was powerful.
Kind of brings you back to reality a little, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, here I am thinking my life, for what I knew, it was over, but, you know.
I mean, you're going through a different kettle of fish, different story for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally.
What did the back injury stem from? What was that surgery needed for?
Yeah, look, it was a misdiagnosed hamstring injury that I trained through, and basically sciatic nerve pain, which was, you know, I was perceiving it as a tight hamstring, and just rolled over in bed one night, and the two discs just ruptured, and I sort of spent 15 months lying on the ground trying to get answers until I found a really good surgeon and he said, look, you've got to have surgery on it now because there was no response in my left leg. I had what was called drop leg. My leg was not really functioning. And he said the nerves in the leg could already be dead because they're under so much pressure from the disc residue and the disc itself. But, yeah, he was a phenomenal surgeon. He operated on Michael Klim back when Michael Klim had his back injury as a swimmer, and he was Gary Speck, his name is, was, you know, again, just an absolute genius and will be a hero of mine for forever. So
how is the back?
It's actually really, I've had a couple of little sort of hiccups along the way, but never had to go back and have surgery. Nothing that a cortisone injection hasn't fixed, and also, you know, nothing that a little bit of my own smart rehab and training doesn't get on top of. You know, we're just our creatures of, you know, I suppose when things are going well, we sort of tend to ignore some of the things that got us to that path of being good. And good thing with a back injury, it'll just tell you every now and then, hang on, you know, get back to some of these processes or exercises to help keep it in check. And it's been really good. So back playing golf, if you could call it playing, searching for balls and trees. But it's good fun.
And so you were a decent tennis player then, like we said.
Yeah. Back in the day, I had dreams of, you know, being top 50 in the world, and but probably looking back at it now, I realised I didn't have the work ethic. I had quite a bit of talent, and then I think I was pretty good at using that as an excuse not to work hard enough. But then when you get to that older age group where people catch up, I think while I had the physical ability, I probably didn't have the work ethic, the hunger, the drive, the mental sort of aptitude to really go through that journey at that stage. And I never got taught any of what was ahead of me. And plus, I think once I started coaching for a couple of years, I realized that I was born to be a coach. I absolutely love helping people achieve their best. And I think, that's where I realized that's what I was born to do. And tennis was just a vehicle at that stage to get me to where I wanted to be.
Is there quite a decent crossover there, tennis to golf? I mean, Gabby Ruffles, you know, one of your students as well, like that she's done the same kind of thing. Is there something there that you think that crosses over pretty naturally?
Yeah, definitely. Just that whole hand-eye coordination, the actual motion of a forehand and a backhand with body rotation, you know, imparting spin on the ball, all those factors just inherent from a tennis player. They'll go to a golf course, and they'll know what slice and what draw means straight away just by, you know, playing tennis. So it won't take.
I feel like tennis and also cricket are pretty ones that, you know, you hear crossing over a lot into golf. And I think, like you said, it's that hand-eye and understanding, I guess, ball movement and everything else, the whole aspect of that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, once you get a few basics and a few fundamentals, you can improve pretty quickly. And that's, you know, what we've seen from a lot of tennis players that move to golf. They can improve really quickly.
And how quickly did the golf bug take over you?
Literally, like, instantly. I had my first round of golf on my wedding day. The guy I was coaching for at the time was a pretty sort of avid golfer and played golf the morning of my wedding and just, yep. I've obviously been to the range and that sort of stuff a little bit the month prior, but literally as soon as I played, I got hooked. Being a tennis coach, I was working a lot from, say, maybe 2 in the afternoon till 7 at night, 8 at night. Had a lot of my mornings free, so probably within 6 months joined a club, Croydon Golf Club, the old Croydon Golf Club where Aaron Baddeley grew up, and started to play a lot, and then met Bads there when he sort of became a member when he was sort of 13 or so. And yeah, I it hit me hard. So love it.
It's something about, I'd love people to study the golf bug because it's crazy how much it just takes over.
It's like I'm walking down the beach here yesterday afternoon, sunset walk, and the guy on the beach hitting bunker shots into a little bag. I'm just like, you know what? It's just, that's what golf is. Like,
respect. Just, you would have just walked past and you would have totally understood what was going on, whereas most people wouldn't.
Yeah, gave him a little nod. Good on you, mate.
Yeah.
How are you feeling? And it is. It's just that. I remember a story talking about Bads. I remember a story when we got married and I think he was had his first child, and he was sort of really trying to switch off from the game. So when he got home, it's just family time. And I remember he's telling me a story once. He found something on the putting green about an hour before he left for the day, and he gets home and he's just thinking about it all night. And he's like, oh, just this. So he goes to the bathroom, he grabs a putter and goes into his walk-in robe, and he's just having a few putts. And Rochelle's like, he's been gone a long time. So she goes into the bedroom, and she can hear something in the walk-in closet. So she opens up the door, and here he is just having a putt. Like, it's just, you know, something like that that's playing 6 or 8 hours a day. He still can't get away from it, you know. So
yeah. It definitely takes over the mind when you're not on the course. You can replay the rounds. I replay my latest round in my head constantly. Yeah. That's a constant replay.
It's funny, but I used to be a kid at school that I remember I got in trouble a lot because I used to practice my leggies. I think I was infatuated with Shane Warne, and I used to do leggies in the line, and the teachers would always have a go at me. And now I find myself where I've just got a bit of room, and I'll just, you know, move the hands, and I'll just like try and, you know, work the golf swing a bit. It just takes over you.
It does.
Can't be helped.
No.
You've been a scratch marker yourself, and did you look towards professional golf?
Yeah. So when I was at the peak of my amateur career, I got down to scratch and was playing Division I pennant for played for Commonwealth. I was preparing for tour school. I was about 6 months out from, you know, entering the tour school, and that's when the back injury happened. And I had sort of 10 years away from the game, just, you know, a lot of different things. My back obviously was one thing, and probably have come back into the game a lot more the last sort of 6 years, 7 years. And probably 18 months ago, got my handicap down to about 3 or 4, and was playing decently respectable, and then played all last year with a shoulder injury but just love playing. I didn't care about competing or worrying about scoring. Just went out with the boys and wanted to play. And the handicaps drifted out a bit, but but just, yeah, just still love the game. Love the game a lot. So.
And so how did you, how did we get to the mental aspect of sport and building Dare to Dream? You said you went and saw some people and you didn't get the answers you were looking for. What was missing? What, how did that come about?
Yeah, so I delved into a thing called NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, a little bit more about communication, like the brain, how we sort of take on language, take on words, vocabulary, what that does to our, you know, I suppose our belief systems and those sort of things. And so I did became a master NLP practitioner. And in the first 12 months after that, running my tennis academy, I started to use some of the principles on some of the kids that I was coaching and then would give them some little exercises to go away and work on. And what I started to find was I begin to approach the mind like a personal trainer with the body, just giving them practical exercises to strengthen certain elements of their body. I started to create a similar philosophy when it comes to the mental game. So whether it's focus, belief system, emotional control, you know, all these different components that make up the mental game, I just wanted to approach it like a personal trainer with the body. And then I started to see the impact that it was having on the kids that I was coaching, and not just from a tennis point of view, but just from a personal point of view, the way that they would approach their schooling and education. And that's when I started Dare to Dream. And back then it was more about teenage, you know, teenage development. Did a lot of seminars, workshops at schools, and then, you know, got into doing some workshops and seminars at golf tournaments or golf clubs. And then it just started to, because golf was my specialty, I suppose, and tennis was my specialty, I just started to target those sports and then specifically golf. And we know golf's very much a mental game. And once, you know, I started to engage golf with some practical strategies that they could actually feel a tangible improvement and see an improvement in outcome, that got me pretty hooked on really developing my own skill set as a mental performance coach. And, for me, coaching is my passion and something I feel like I was born for, and then golf is another passion of mine. Having those two to connect and somehow get away with calling it a job was just, you know, I'm done.
It's horrible.
That's how that all came about.
Is there many in your space that does the similar things you do, or is it a bit of a niche market there? Like I know that there's sports, you know, psychologists, and there's, you know, coaches that are helping players out there.
Yeah. Look, I think there's definitely a lot of sports psychologists and those sort of things out there. As far as a specific golf mental performance coach, I've worked with a lot of different athletes, AFL players, Olympians. The last 4 years, 5 years, I've narrowed my market down to golf. And I did that for a variety of reasons, but mainly because I wanted to make sure that my communication, my delivery, my expertise was in the sport that I love and also the sport that is probably one of the most mental sports there is.
Yep.
So, you know, I just thought it was something that I wanted to do professionally and personally. And, you know, a lot of my success at the same time, I suppose you could use, was in the sport of golf. So it just made sense for me to declutter my business professionally and just target that field. And answering your question, there's probably not very many that specialize in golf. There may be a handful, maybe most around the world, but there are a couple, but not too many.
Yeah. I mean, we always go back to Bobby Jones's favorite, you know, the biggest quote, you know, the golf is played on a 5-inch course between your ears, the space between your ears. So when you said that before, I was just thinking that there's not many other sports that I can think of that you have so much time, that you have so much, you know, that the mental game is so much harder, I feel, in golf than any other sports. Are there any other sports you can compare golf to that's on the similar?
Oh, look, things like
I know there are.
Yeah.
All sports have their moments.
For sure. I work with a shooter, a Commonwealth Games shooter years ago, and that's very much mental. So, you know, controlling heart rate, obviously controlling cognitive patterns, thinking that will inevitably sort of manage that heart rate. But that was very mental. But I think golf is such a complex game that triggers us mentally in so many different ways. I think that's what makes it such a complex game and why we are so hooked on it, because we could, you know, get on top of one part of the game and smash one part of the game, but then putt like a donkey and brings us back to that, you know, that even point. It's I don't think there are many other sports or any other sports that have the complexity of golf that trigger us mentally so much.
And I guess with golf as well, there's so many external factors as well. So one thing is all the internal stuff that you can kind of control, but then there's stuff that you can't control and you've got to deal with that as well, such as the group you're playing with or the crowd or the, you know, the noise, stuff like that. So, I just think it's such a massive area to delve into, and there's so much in there that we can unravel.
Yeah, for sure.
We've been talking about a fair bit lately, and especially having our girl Amy Walsh with us for the last couple of months on the podcast. Shout out, Amy. We miss you. Please come back soon. Best of luck.
Good luck this week, Amy.
Good luck this weekend. But bringing up the latest coverage on the mental game with Jim Herman's win at the Wyndham, he spoke openly in both the post-round interview with Amanda and at the post-tournament conference as well, around his battle with the mental game, saying he is mentally deficient were the words that he talked to. I'm watching a guy that had only won on tour last year and now winning again, still sitting there saying he doesn't have a strong mental game. And it really intrigued me that he would still be talking about it straight after another win. Did you happen to catch that? And if so, what were your thoughts when he was talking that through?
Yeah, look, I did catch it, and I thought it was really a really interesting post-round interview. And I think the thing that I loved about it so much is he wasn't avoiding thinking about, talking about, or attacking his mental game. Like, it's just reality of his is that he struggles with the mental game. Like, most people that struggle with the mental game will try and avoid it as much as they can, and they won't want to reinforce it because it just builds that sort of identity within them that they're weak mentally. And, you know, I think for Jim that was just a great thing for him to go, I've had so much trouble with this through the years. And when you're not avoiding something, you have a much better chance of being able to actually manage it. And that doesn't mean beat it or get on top of it, but it just means it doesn't beat you that day. You come out even almost. So it was a really interesting conversation, and, I thought it was fantastic the way that he approached that subject.
Yeah, it was very intriguing just to see the acknowledgement so openly in both the, you know, it was as though he was going to say it to anyone that was willing to listen almost, because he came straight out with it in that post round, literally straight after the round, or straight after announcing that he was the winner, really, because he was you could see him in the scorer's hut, he was struggling to drink a bottle of water, like
it's the best thing I've ever seen.
he had the lid still on the bottle when he went to drink it, and it was visibly shaking. He really didn't want to go back out there for a playoff, so he was happy that Horschel missed that final putt. But it was so intriguing watching him acknowledge it in that way, and I kind of understand your thought process there around that acknowledgement. Some people don't want to give it airtime because they don't want to acknowledge it and let it become something when it already is something and they really need to acknowledge it. We've had a comment come through or a question come through in the live chat that I might just quickly throw to, because the next question I had, Tristan, I'll bring that up for you, Tristan. And Tristan, just for future benefit, click on the link and we'll be able to show your name on screen. The link's in the post. But nonetheless, Jamie, how do you switch off from not thinking about the last shot, which was bad, to prepare yourself for the next shot?
Yeah, okay, so great question. A couple of things, I'll tie it back a little bit to expectation management, that before a round of golf, if you expect that you're going to hit a bad shot or two, which every golfer on the planet should expect that during this upcoming round of golf, you're probably going to hit a couple of bad shots. So when you're preparing yourself for your reality, when your reality comes out, it doesn't have as much of a shock factor on you. It's like, oh, there it is, and then you move on. But if, again, you're trying to avoid, and when we talk about expectation management, club-level golfers are great at, you know, the day before, the morning of, thinking today could be the day. I'm going to have 36 points today, when in reality, we as club golfers have 36 points 3 to 7% of the time. So we should not be expecting to have 36 points. So what that means is, it doesn't mean you can't have 36 points. It just means that when something average happens, it doesn't shock you as much, and then you will actually be able to let go of it and move on. So, Tristan, I would say that could be one of the easiest things to implement, is just sort of get yourself prepared for your current reality, okay? So what type of golfer are you? If you're a 5-marker, a 10-marker, a 15-marker, what type of shots consist of a round of golf for a player of that quality? And when you do that, then you accept things that happen a lot more, and that's ultimately one of the most powerful things.
So if I expect to slice it into the piss on the right, I can accept it more after that happens?
Yep. Well, the other thing,
when you do it 3 or 4 times, that's when you you're compounding it.
Yeah, there is that. There is that when you actually accept that that's the possibility of happening today, and ultimately you're okay with it.
Yes.
All of a sudden, you take a lot of the fear, the power away from the fear of that shot, because you're like, well, if it happens, it's okay. It doesn't mean anything other than I might have to reload, or I might have to take a drop. You know, I talk a lot about, if anyone's listening to my podcast or whatever, I talk a lot about allowing yourself the freedom to fail.
Yeah.
And what that does is ultimately it takes away the fear of failure, which is the thing that really interrupts our performance. I won't say the most, but it's one of the big things for a lot of us that interrupts our performance. So, yeah, pretty cool concept that does take some people a little bit of time to get their head around, but
And there's a difference as well there with allowing the failure factor to come into the game versus planning to play poorly.
Yes, absolutely. And I think an interesting conversation I had a couple of years ago with a client from Royal Melbourne. She was playing she made it to a club championship final at her other club, and she'd never made the final before. And she rings me on the Sunday and says, Jamie, I just made the final of the club champs. I'm playing against a lady who's like won it 5 out of 6 times. What do I do? And I'm like sitting there going, well, I suppose my realistic mindset is going, well, you better get
yourself. She's due for a loss. Yeah. the other player, she's due for a loss.
Because the player is obviously better than you. That's on paper. That's just the hard facts of it. And I said, have you allowed yourself the freedom to fail? And she sort of, there's this pause on the phone, and about 6-7 seconds later, she goes, what do you mean? I said, well, have you allowed yourself the freedom to lose this match? And it's actually okay if you do lose, but what do you want to go out there and do? And she said, yeah. She said, I am okay if I lose, but I want to go out there and play to win. And I'm like, that's perfect.
Yep.
If you're happy to lose by going out there and actually playing to hit good shots and playing to win and committing to confident golf, then you can't lose. If you lose the match but you play the way you want, then you've won, really. But if you go out there and you play timidly and scared, then you're probably going to lose, and you're going to feel like crap and you know, not get over it. And she did a great job and played the most committed, confident, free golf she'd played in a long time. And
did she get up?
She did get up, but she did get up, and it was a great match. And
would have been some good elation. From getting that under her belt.
5 or 6 holes in, she said, "I didn't care about the outcome anymore. I was playing such free golf and having so much fun in that mindset. I was winning. She goes, I didn't care if I was up or down in the match. I was already winning. And that's that's the mental game. You can win the mental game and shoot, you know, 30 points, or you can lose the mental game and have 36 points. Just the variance of golf. So,
Thanks for the question, Tristan. I appreciate it, mate. And guys, if you're listening there, if you've got any other questions, we'll bring them up on screen during the interview as well. But on the question that Tristan raised, and you mentioned also your podcast, which is the Mental Mastery Podcast. Yeah. I've been a long-time listener of the podcast, and one of the things I enjoyed listening to, you spoke about when hitting a poor shot, you tend to keep that in the memory bank, and you can vividly describe what made it a bad shot. You know, I turned my hands over or I came out and in, and you can vividly describe exactly why it was a bad shot. But we don't tend to do that nearly as much when we hit, you know, that pure shot. We don't tend to play that over in our heads and understand and comprehend what made that a good shot. You know, not doing this can lead people down a rabbit hole during the round. But why do you think we latch on to the negative and play less attention to those great shots?
Yeah, look, human nature, just where, you know, we are wired in that little bit more of a negative sense. And, you know, I think, you know, when I talk about this with clients, I talk a lot about the devil is in the detail. Like, I don't mind if you want to go into detail when you hit a poor shot and describe what it felt like, describe what it sounded like, and describe what it looked like, and all of that is crap. But I don't mind you doing that, providing you also do that for the good shots. Describe what it felt like, describe what it sounded like, so at least we can even up the seesaw. But for most golfers, yeah, we hit a good shot and we go, oh, that was good, or about time, where there's no detail there. So, you know, when we hit a bad shot, as you mentioned, we go into what it felt like. Oh, that felt, you know, I got quick, or I hit it fat, or, you know, it's got a slice on it, or whatever it might be. We go into a lot of detail, and the detail is what the brain loves. The brain latches onto detail, and then from that it creates an image, a memory. So it reinforces what just happened, and then we call it negative mental momentum. So you know, a simple thing is just to don't have any detail for a poor shot, but when you hit a good shot, go into detail, and what you'll find is you'll be able to create positive mental momentum quite quickly. So,
and because I saw a video of yours as well that said that 80% of our thoughts are negative during the day.
Yep.
And so I guess that you, when you think about it that way, you can pretty easily transfer that over to your round of golf.
Oh, yeah. You know, when you look at 80% of our thoughts are negative and 70% of them are repetitive. Like, we're just repeating.
There's negative.
Negative. So, again, and that's just the way that our brain is wired. And it's recognizing, okay, well, that's, you know, that's what it is. What can I do to change it? And there's, you know, been some great stuff around neuroplasticity the last, it's been around for a while, but, you know, it's become more mainstream probably the last 5 to 7 years, and that is just being able to change the way our brain, you know, the brain composition, even from an MRI machine, going through some, you know, neuroplasticity exercises, and then having an MRI of the brain 3-6 months later, the brain takes on a different form. So we can always change these patterns, whether they're cognitive patterns or, neurological patterns, but we need to recognize it and then have some strategies to be able to create that change.
Do you mind taking us through, just quickly for those that don't know, the cognitive process that you talk about, how we've got that thought, emotion, behavior, outcome, and how everything can kind of go back to that?
Yeah, for sure. We talk about a cognitive sequence, a four-step process that really leads to any outcome, and it starts with our thinking. Our thinking creates our emotional state. So the brain processes the words or a thought, and then it will deliver a corresponding chemical into the bloodstream to make us feel a certain way. Now, our emotional state drives our pattern of behavior. Now, in golf, that is the way we swing a golf club or the way we chip a golf ball or putt a golf ball. And our our behavior ultimately determines and dictates the quality of our outcome. So if we have a really crappy outcome, we can actually go back down that chain and go, you know, what was the pattern of behavior? How did I perform in that moment to create that outcome? What emotional state did I feel? Did I feel scared, confident, whatever it might have been? And what was the thought pattern that created that emotional state? And I call it tilt. And Nate, back from your poker days.
Yeah, poker, yep.
Tilt. So tilt is, you know, when something bad happens, a poker player will go on tilt. They'll just lose their mind and play really poorly and just aggressively. And there's also positive tilt, you know, in golf. When we, some good things happen to us, and especially for us guys, we get a decent ego and we, you know, puff out the chest and we think we can drive the green or, you know, reach the par five in two. And that puts us in an overconfident emotional state. And then the pattern of behavior is obviously more aggressive than our skill set, and then the outcome is going to be poor. So, yeah, I think it's when we take it back to thinking, the next question I ask a lot of my clients is, how often do you practice your thinking? And then the client looks at me like, what the hell am I talking about? I can't practice that. That just happens automatically. So, yeah, it's just an easy way to show people that thinking is a really important part of that cycle and sequence, and we have to practice it and train it.
Yeah, I think if we jump in and do a few golf club scenarios, so if we talk about club golf and scenarios that we've been in personally, one for me is I think I've done well with eliminating the thought of the bad shot and moving on and playing shot by shot and doing that. I think I've worked on that for a long time, and I'm pretty proud of that. One of the things that's probably my devil at the moment is on the putting green. It's funny, sometimes I'll see a 10-foot putt and for some reason I'll go into this clear headspace that I'm going to hole it and I feel so good about it. And most of the time when I get that feeling, it feels like I'm in the zone and it will go in.
Yeah.
And then, but the majority of the time, if I have a 4 or 5 footer or something like that, yeah, I'll walk up to it and I'll be like, you're going to miss this. You're going to miss this. You're going to miss this. And I can't, even if I step off it, it's stuck in my head. I'm trying to let it go. I can't let it go. I'm standing over the putt. I'm not giving myself any chance to put it in the hole. I'm ready to push it. I'm ready to pull it, whatever. What should I be doing there when I get that thought in my head?
Yeah, look, I think it's a really interesting one because a lot of people in that moment, like when we have those negative thoughts of I'm going to miss this 3 footer or 4 footer,
yep,
a lot of people apply meaning to that thought. Okay, that thought means I'm going to miss this putt when it doesn't mean that at all. Okay, because we have that thought, we're trying to, I suppose, repel that thought. We're trying to block that thought out. We're trying to push it away, which while we're trying to do that, it's not going anywhere. But it's like I talk to people about it's like a cloud in the sky. Just because the cloud's in the sky doesn't mean it's going to bring rain. Okay, and we talk about the flow state. It's just be aware of a thought coming in and just observe it, but then let it float by. Don't attach to it. And sometimes attaching to it is actually trying to fight it. But if we just let it be there and realize it doesn't mean anything, the thought's come and it's gone. Now I've just got a 4 footer. I just need to then commit to hitting the best putt I can. Yep. It's going to free you up a little bit. But it's, you know, I talk a lot about applied meaning in this game. It's just, you know, we just apply so much meaning to things that don't have any meaning. So, yeah, I would just say just recognize that if it's a negative thought, just let it come and let it go. We have 60,000 thoughts a day. So if we allow that to pass by, it's going to be replaced with another thought at any moment. But, yeah, just allow them to float by and commit to doing something.
Right. Yeah, it's a funny one because I reckon my percentage of makes, you know, from 6 to 15 feet is way better than under 6 feet because I give myself that freedom of, look, if I hole it, I hole it. If I don't, I'm probably not expected to hole this one. But I seem to putt those much better than inside. And another area that I struggle with is with my chipping game. If I stand over the ball and I think about blading the shot through the green, my new thing now is, well, stuff it. If you can putt it, go grab the putter and put it back on. Because in my head, I'm like, if I blade this and I throw it through the green, I know that my putt's going to be much better than that. And that's something that I've been trying to work on as well. But that probably comes up three times around where I think, oh, I'm going to blade it. And straight away, I'm just like, grab the putter. I'll deal with that with the putter. And then I can try and work on the actual technique later on.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, a simple one for the putting thing, and this is really, really simple and applies to a lot of the game, but the 4 or 5 footer especially, is the thought that I have to hold this putt versus the thought of, gee, I would like to hold this putt. Okay, that makes such a big difference. When the brain processes, I have to make it, the corresponding chemical and the emotional state that triggers versus, wow, wouldn't it be nice to make this putt, or I'd like to make this putt, and having an understanding of reality as well. Like, I'm going to just get up a little thing I saved today on putting probability. Where is it? I can't find it now, but a 5 foot putt, okay, PGA Tour player, what's the percentage make rate from 5 feet, do you think?
It'd be 99%.
From 5 feet?
Oh, 95%.
Yeah. Now, I'm just... 5 feet. Well, I'm pretty sure I know exactly what it is, but I'm just going to try and find... For some reason, I can't find it.
For me, it's 50%. I reckon for pros, it would be up... It'd have to be 85%, 90%. What do you reckon, Steve?
Yeah, I'm at the plus 90.
Yeah.
For 5 foot, I'm at the plus 90. Okay. Just considering they can direct, you know, where on the green they want to land a shot versus us. True. You know, anywhere on the dance floor is good.
Okay. From 5 feet, percentage of one putt from a PGA Tour player is 76%.
Yeah, wow. A lot lower than their thought.
And these guys practice their putting 2 hours a day every day.
That's insane.
So this is such a great thing for expectation management. Club level golfers, I believe, have the worst expectation management of any golfer on the planet.
Yep.
Because years ago, I actually, when we talk about that 36 points, for most of us, when we play around the golf, we're thinking, I want to have 36 points today. I want to play to my handicap. And that makes sense.
Yeah.
But... it might have been 8 or 9 years ago, I got 10 of my clients to go to their club at the start of the year and say, can you print off all my rounds of golf? And we went through a statistic of what percentage of rounds you had that year were 36 points or more. And it was between 3 and 7%. And the 7%, he had a great year. He dropped a lot of shots on his handicap. So he was the hot player in the group, and it was only 7% of the time.
It surprised me. It is funny when you talk about, you know, club golfers and their expectations. I automatically think about, you know, people that think that because they hit their 7-iron 175 metres one time that they can hit it there every single time, and just those unrealistic expectations and where the ego kind of takes over and not being realistic with your golf game and everything else. So I think it's all a learning curve. Do you believe that the amateur golfer should keep stats of what they're doing?
Yeah, definitely. I'm all for a club level golfer approaching their game in a similar fashion to an elite player, because I don't believe that, you know, the pros should their golf means any more to them than it does to us. You know, like, golf to us is, it means a lot, and the joy we get when we play well and the joy we get when we're improving is fantastic. So I'm all for, you know, golf, but I'm also all for club level golfers creating a team around them that provide them with the correct information in the correct way about, you know, achieving their best, whether it be physically, technically, or mentally. I think that's a big one.
I guess, yeah, we've spoken about grind my gears. We do that segment on the podcast, the other podcast, and one of the big things that we've spoken about a couple of times is slow play.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a big issue in golf. We talk about it a lot. Yeah. And we just saw it in when Stacey Lewis won over in the, what was that, the not the British Open, the Yeah, the Scottish Open, sorry, where she had to deal with that for the 2 days.
Yeah.
How do you deal with slow play? And like, do your partners make a difference on a slow play day?
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and go, you know, slow play shouldn't impact you. Don't think about it. Think about something else, you know, appreciate what you're doing and where you are. And
sing a song.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. Slow play is annoying as hell. It really is. And I think, you know, the best for me, everyone's different too. So the best way for me to, I suppose, manage slow play is to, for me, try and reframe. I've got quite a sarcastic sense of humor. So I don't mind, because I generally will play, we'll have a bit of a banter. I generally create a fairly good rapport with the people I'm playing with. And so then if there is someone that's a slow play in my group, I can have a little bit of sarcastic banter and let out my, not my frustration, but just let that out that way for me, and do it in, you know, do it in, I suppose, the best.
A lighthearted way.
Yeah, the best taste. I'm not really having a go at them. I'm just trying to make light of the situation and have a bit of fun with it. And, you know, but I have seen people I play with that just absolutely grind their gears. My God, they want to just jump out of a plane. You know,
I had a scenario on the weekend. I played, you know, one of the last groups. I think it was the last group in comp on Saturday. And I rocked up literally last minute, you know, not long before tea time. I was helping our almighty Matt Bailey moving house. So I was rushing to get to golf. And by the time I'd gotten there, the group that I was with had agreed with the group of two in front that we would make a six, because there was one person in the group in front that was a renowned slow player. So they thought by playing with them, we would be able to make it, you know, it wouldn't be any worse to start with, but they thought that we might be able to make it better. It wasn't any better. I can tell you now, I would have much preferred we let them go and catch up to them and constantly, you know, nip at their heels and, you know, get to the first par three and go, can we just play through? I would have much preferred that. I had stuff to do at the end of the day as well. And the other thing that was annoying about that was I found that after the first few holes, when they'd putt it out, they'd just be hanging around the side of the green waiting for everyone to putt out, for all six players to putt out. And I started trying to get mine in the cup first so that I could get to the next tee box and tee off to try and hurry the group up. That had a really crap outcome in my game, because I was constantly rushing. And I dropped a few hints in there to the guys that had putted out first, saying, guys, just move on, like get over to the next tee, we'll come over, don't worry, we'll make it there. But it wasn't helping. I think it took 15 holes for someone to actually go, oh yeah, we should sort out an order. And I was like, boys, you're first into the cup, you're first to tee off for the next hole, get it done. That was frustrating. But the other thing, and I've jumped into your Facebook group as well with the Mental Mastery podcast group, and one of the things I brought up a few weeks ago was about negative talkers. So first question there is, what are some things you can do if you find that you yourself are a negative talker?
I think again, any type of humor is fantastic. So when I you know, if I've had clients that are, you know, just big deep negative talkers, and they have been their whole life, and you know, realistically they will be their whole life, it's just the way that they're, you know, they're sort of conditioned. But I just get them to, let's say for example, they might have a favorite cartoon character or you know, a movie star, and I get them to go out on course, and when they're going through that negative self-talk, I get them to actually try and say it in that movie star's voice or cartoon character's voice. Just bring a different element to it. And what actually inevitably happens is it makes them laugh, and it just diffuses the impact that negative talk has. And that's really one of the most important things. It's diffusing a lot of those things that can trigger you know, deeper states, and just using that as a bit of a softening tool, a bit of a sense of humor. So that's sort of just one little technique that that I've used that's worked really well through the years.
Mm. And I threw up a comment about a scenario that happened a few weeks ago into your group, and it was around, you know, being in a group of a negative talker. It was a lovely old lady, and I don't want to talk ill about her, but played with a couple of older ladies on the day, hadn't met them before, etc. So, met them for the first time, but yeah, it only took, I don't know, two holes into it, and one was already going, I hate this hole. I just want it over and done with. And then it just compiled from there, and it got even worse, talking about her own game over the last 2 months. It's been poor. It's been terrible. Yeah. And I'm trying to do the normal things of, you know, trying to pump her back up. And she's talking about her putting. It's so bad. And I've said, well, actually, you know, you've had a couple of really good two putts, you know, it's not that bad. And I'm just trying to pump her up and not drag myself down. And in the meantime, my game was woeful as well. So I wasn't doing any better. Yeah. And then sort of back half of the game, she had enough of talking about her own game. She started talking negative about my game. And that just took it to a whole other level. And I just could not deal. I could not deal. I couldn't get out of there any quicker. Jumped straight in the car. Didn't even go upstairs for a drink. And, you know, wished them well. Thanks. Nice to meet you. All that sort of stuff. But what are some things you could do? This is for the
I reckon she's my spirit animal. I've got a mate, Joshy, who hates playing with me because I'll get onto the hole and I'll point out every hazard and everything that's wrong with this hole that it is before we even tee off. And I'll talk about, the last five times I've played this 18th hole, I've had 1 point or whatever. And he's like, you are a basket case, mate.
I think the interesting thing is, you know, early on you did the nice thing and tried to pump her tires up, and you focused more on her than you did yourself, which is nice of you, but one, it didn't help you, but also may have triggered her pattern of behaviour later on the round to then engage with your game of golf. So if you just, you know, you find yourself in that sort of situation, you pretty much give that person donuts, he or her that are being really negative, just give them donuts. Don't really engage with that type of or that side of their behavior. Just really focus on your own stuff. Then what you're doing is you're not inviting them to engage with you in any capacity. You're just diffusing that conversation and that connection with them. And I think that could be one of the best things.
It's so funny. I think about that. I'm happy to talk with the other person about whatever. Banter is all good, but do not talk about my game. Do not talk to my ball when I'm putting. If I'm putting and it's tracking towards the hole and you say, oh, nice putt, that's in or whatever, and it lips out, it's all that person's fault. And that sends you on tilt for the next tee shot.
Well, Jackie, my wife's the same. I remember in Vegas a couple of years ago, Herbie and Dom, like we're all there prepping for the US Open, and we're playing a course there, and Jackie hits a ball and Dom, Herbie's coach, is like, you know, get up. And it doesn't get up. And Jackie's like, Dom, will you shut the hell up? Don't talk to my
dad. Yeah, that's right.
They're going, it's not going to change the outcome. But she's like, don't talk to my ball. Like,
But it's like poker as well. If I'm in with the best hand and someone's like, mate, you're home, like you're doubling up here, and there's still a turn or even a river to come, and there's a 1% chance they're going to hit a one outer against me every time that someone else has said, nice hand, mate, you've got this down. You know, it's
when the ball is so close to the cup and they go, oh, nice putt, and then it lips.
Do not talk to my ball. Or they've like, you know, that's the best shot you've hit all day, and you just know that it was just a shit shot and you're not happy with it either, and you're like, stop, just don't even talk to me.
So I suppose there's probably a couple of things that we might draw attention to of our listeners to. So you're in the process of building an online learning hub, which is soon to launch. Tell us a bit about that.
I've been looking at doing this online video program. So on my website currently there's a free video program, just sort of, you know, 8 tips to an unbreakable mental game. People to start to just learn a little bit of practical tools around the mental game. And I've been in the process of putting together some courses that I wanted to film. Now, obviously, COVID this year has just handcuffed that. So what we're doing now is actually building an online training hub or learning hub where we're going to be delivering a lot of some live webinars and using that footage and that content to create courses. And we're just sort of transferring that free program onto the new platform at the moment. So hopefully that will launch anytime over the next sort of 3 to 5 days. And then in the next week or two, we will do our first live webinar and then cut that up into an educational training course that people can subscribe to. And it's, you know, the learning hub is not just going to be the mental game. It's going to be a golf learning hub. It'll be different facets of things that golfers can learn to improve their game and, improve their themselves as well. We know, you know, the balance or the connection between golf and life is so strong. It's just going to be a lot of things that we're going to sort of add on that platform that's going to help people just upskill and learn new skills that are going to help them enjoy the game more but also become better golfers. So,
Our listeners can get that at daretodream.com.au.
So the website daretodream.com.au with the number 2. I'm actually just going through this week revamping that to make it a little bit more user-friendly and sort of be able to just click onto the learning hub and that'll go straight to the external sort of training center, I suppose. That's all there. They can sign up to be a member and get access to that free program, my blogs, a lot of content around the mental game that they can start to delve into.
When do you think that learning hub's going to be up and running?
Hopefully that free course will be up in 3 to 5 days.
That's also for the everyday golfer as well. Everyday golfer can jump into that. It's not necessarily like you obviously work with a lot of professionals, but this is also tailored towards the everyday golfer too.
Yeah, this will probably be more targeted to the everyday golfer. And there are elite golfers will be able to get a lot from it, but it's going to be more targeted around the club level golfer. The first paid program will be around a pre-round routine, so preparing you for, I won't say for greatness, not to play great, but just preparing you to put your best foot forward, get to the first tee and give yourself a great opportunity to play well that day. And there are so many facets outside of golf in our life, the stress of work, pressures and all those other things that do just drag over and impact our ability to get to the first tee in a great mental sort of mental state of mind. So that's going to be something that the listeners, the viewers can sign up to. And, that has a huge impact on our performance.
Yeah, brilliant. You touched on that you've worked with some big names, some pro golfers, Ryan Ruffles, Lucas Herbert, Gabby as well. You work with Gabby Ruffles as well. Yeah. Tell us about the experience working with those guys. You know, there's some big names coming up in Australian golf and doing great things all around the world.
Yeah, look, I've been lucky enough to work with Herbie for just over 5 years. So just before he turned pro, we started work. And then Ryan about 4 years and Gabby about 4 years as well. So, you know, it's for me, it's just obviously a great journey, a lot of ups and downs that, a lot of people may not see the downs. For me, it's I just feel blessed and privileged to be a small part of their journey. And, those guys, all three of them and a lot of other players I work with have so much natural ability. I'm just sort of, staying out of their way, so to speak. And, they're going to be great golfers,
They've already had so much great success, the three of them. And Ryan must be so close to that breakthrough. He's getting, had a couple of close runs and a couple of, agonizing, defeats on the weekend. So he must be getting closer and closer.
Was there a learning from it? Message into him a few weeks ago?
Pardon?
Did you put a text message into him a few weeks ago when he ended up, coming second?
Yeah, look, we speak sort of probably, 3 or 4 times a week, every week. So chatted to him the night before the round, and to be honest, you know, he thought he was ready, and you know, tough conditions the next day, didn't quite have it, and then coming in, he did say that he got a bit tentative and didn't handle it as well as he'd like, but he certainly learnt a lot from it, and yeah, you know, like, we've got a really good strategy in place for next time he's in that position, and you know, he's on the right track, and you know, it's very easy for someone like Ruff to try and force that next phase, that next step, when we try and force it, that, you know, never really happens very well. So we just step back and keep doing what we're doing and just allow that next phase to happen organically, and he's in a good place.
You tweeted out not long after that went down, and acknowledged it pretty quickly around things to learn and how the growing that he'll do from it.
He's great, Ruff. He you know, all of those three, you know, Hubius as well, you know, very good at not covering up their truth or covering up their reality. They just step into it, learn from it, move on. You know, it's just part and parcel of being a professional golfer. You know, you're not going to win every event. You're not going to have, you know, success in every opportunity. It's he handled that, you know, fantastically.
Yeah, I'm sure even learning from, you know, Curtis Luck having a win in the Korn Ferry, you know, he's been there a while. He's been on a heap of starts as well, and we probably expected him to have a quicker start than I guess what he did. So I'm sure that these guys are all learning off each other over there. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what those boys do, and I'm sure you are as well. And yeah, Gabby as well. Gabby's got a massive future ahead of her.
Yeah, Gab's doing well. She's you know, had a really great, you know, missed the cut last week by a shot at the Women's British Open, but had a really good second round, and she's probably one of the quickest learners I've ever.
She's only been playing for how long?
I think, maybe 6 years.
Yeah, if that.
Like, the first time she played around the golf, so just a very quick learner, and it's good to watch.
We heard from Amy that that's a bit of a competition between the two of them, who's going to be the better sibling.
they are so competitive. It's so much fun to have them, like, working with them both at the same time. We did a training camp in Vegas, I think it was last year, and just seeing them compete with one another, and it's fierce. It's so much fun to watch. It's awesome.
Now, I've got to ask you before we let you go, you caddied at Augusta in the Masters for Bryden McPherson. I need to just quickly understand, what was that experience like?
I don't know. It's been, you know, a long time since that day. I still probably haven't come up with the words to describe it. It was just a phenomenal experience. And
what year was that?
2012. So, and for me, I worked with Bryden since he was 13, 14. So, you know, seeing him go through, win the British Amateur and be on the bag there was amazing. But one of the best things was, one of my favourite players when I started playing growing up was Ben Crenshaw. And we got paired with Ben Crenshaw the first two rounds. And I just, I honestly, if my life had have ended in some way that week, I would have been okay with it.
Yeah,
walking around Augusta with Ben. Yeah, that's insane.
I think he said he was what did he say in the interview? It was, I smoked it down the middle, and this was talking about his first tee shot in the Masters. I smoked it down the middle. That was an experience in itself at my first Masters, and he went on to say, you know, that's it. I could go home right now.
Yeah,
I'd be happy just to, you know, after smoking it down the middle, we can go home now.
Yeah, and look, I was lucky enough to, the 2 weeks prior, we'd have a couple of practice rounds. We played with Bads, and as a guest of one of the players, I can, you know, we can go in the pro shop or the clubhouse, and having that privilege was phenomenal, because as a caddy, you don't get that privilege tournament week. Being able to get access to the clubhouse the few weeks prior was just phenomenal. So much history in there, and it's just a... Yeah, phenomenal. It's phenomenal.
Did you hang around for the weekend? Did you stick it out there?
No, we didn't. We hung around Saturday, but I think we got out of town, I think, on the Sunday maybe. So
Right.
Yeah, because Bubba won that year, so
yeah, with the famous hook, didn't he, out of the pine straw against Louis?
Right. Yep, famous hook. So no, we got out of there, and I think we were watching it maybe back. I can't remember now, but yeah, we were watching it somewhere. So
that's an incredible experience.
Yeah, yeah. I would say to any golfer, Augusta is definitely the dream for any golfer to go to. It's like no other place I've ever been to.
We had a hypothetical about it a few episodes ago in the podcast around how much would you actually pay to play Augusta, and there was even like a caveat in there: how much extra would you pay if you could get guaranteed good weather and all that sort of stuff? And I threw out $100,000.
There's some big numbers getting thrown out there.
Throw it out there.
I'd be with you, Steve. I think it's money shouldn't be even considered.
It's worth that awkward refinance conversation with the other half, wouldn't it?
That's right. There's nothing to refinance. The house is gone. If we have to be homeless, we have to be
homeless. I'm buying a trailer and I'm parking out the car park of Augusta.
Did you load up on your Masters merch when you were there?
Oh, my God, did I ever. I'm still wearing shirts.
Yeah.
I came up here to do a training camp with Herbie for a week, and I've been up here 8 weeks because of COVID, and I brought one of the Masters shirts. I've got that. I've had that many shirts and hats and stuff. It's I'm a sucker for merchandise. I love a good logo.
Yeah. Well, I saw that because they called the Masters off or no crowds there. They said that anyone that was in the ballot and had a ticket still had the right to buy all the Masters merchandise this year and that. I'm like, God, imagine the amount that you would load up on. And because all those people are now saving the money from the tickets and the accommodation, you'd just be going hell for leather.
Exactly.
I need to find a person that had tickets in the ballot so I can load them up as well.
I know someone. I just thought about that then. That's brilliant.
All right, cool. We'll talk after this, Nate.
Yeah.
Jamie, look, it's been an absolute pleasure to be able to talk to you, mate. Like, it's been great to be able to listen to you on your podcast for the last sort of, and I think 12 months I've been listening to that and picked up a lot of things along the way. But to actually get to, have a chat with you, albeit face-to-face via somewhat Zoom or StreamYard that we're using. But, it's been great to be able to have a chat with you, mate, and unpack a few additional pieces there and hopefully help out some of our members in the group as well. It's been great. So thank you once again for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me, guys, and congrats on everything you guys are doing. It's, you're really making some noise, and I know that all the golfers out there really appreciate it. So doing a great job.
Awesome. That's great to hear, Jame. Really
thanks, appreciate mate. That. Talk to you again soon. Cheers.
Thanks, Jame.
That was fantastic. I love that.
Like I said before, I could have gone hours. I reckon I'll have to get back online with him another time, book in a session. I'll be doing his online course, that's for sure.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't a counseling session, but I think it was great to unpack a lot of what he's been through and the experience that he's been able to provide in his learnings is phenomenal. And I love listening to the podcast, and shout out to Roscoe as well. I know you probably will have a listen to this or may have even been watching tonight, so shout out to you, Roscoe, mate. Enjoyed listening to you as well. So now we've got a couple of things to get to wrap off. We've got Father's Day coming up, so a bit of a shout out to Dint Putters, our sponsor. They're running a Father's Day special at the moment, 10% off their Phoenix putter. So, if you're a dad out there, drop a hint to the kids and fill them in on what you can get on board for Father's Day at dintputters.com.au. So, they've also Anthony was kind enough to send me one of these. It's one of their hole-in-one flags. Now, if my old man's watching, please look away for a second. But this is one of your hole-in-ones that I've managed to grab a sneaky photo of last time I was up visiting you. I'm going to send this on to him. I've gone a little bit out there and put a custom logo on it. That's one of my brands there. But he's normally got a standard logo on there that gets done a lot quicker. This actually took a while to get done with that additional logo on it. But looking forward to giving that to Dad for Father's Day as well. But get on to dintputters.com.au and
can I just order a hole-in-one flag just to make myself feel good.
By all means, mate, you can throw it up there if you want. You can even put.
I can just pick a future my date. Pagan or
one. Well, I'll, yes. I'll give you the date of my pagan one on there, and you can add that to you. So, yeah, you can constantly bring that up, like you already do.
And I will continue.
Good. Well, it's been another great interview again tonight. So, looking forward to getting this up on the podcast and loaded up for Thursday launch. Our podcast that recorded last night will be up later tonight. So, those that are traveling to work in the morning can have a bit of a listen too. Or
it was a good one this week. I really enjoyed that one. So, they're listening back. If you haven't listened to Tuesdays, it was a cracker. We had fun last night.
I think we missed Amy last night. I think we went for a little bit, but it was a lot of fun last night's episode. So, yeah, stay tuned for that. That should launch tonight or early tomorrow morning. So, yeah, get into it. But thanks again, guys, for joining our live chat for another Tuesday. And, Nate.
See you next Tuesday. See you, boys and girls. Oh, yeah.
We're three golf tragics. We're weekend packers, and we love to go to golf. And I think
I showed you guys that on the weekend.
Yes, you did. We'll get to that shortly.